Today on The Queso, artist Luis Sahagún. Originally from Guadalajara, Jalisco, Mexico, he is one of 10 recipients to win the 3 Arts Award this year. He graces us with his presence, talks a little bit about his art and his background, and what this award means to him and his work and his community. You can find out more about Luis's work at luissahagun.com. That's luissahagun.com. And learn more about the 3 Arts organization at 3arts.org. Thanks for joining me. Hey, congratulations so much on your award this year from the 3 Arts Foundation.
Yeah, the 3 Arts Foundation, it's an amazing organization for Chicago-based artists. Thank you so much. Super excited and honored to be part of the 3 Arts family. And yeah, it's such a gift.
So you are one of 10 Chicago artists who are the recipients of this year's award. Of course, on October 19th, it will be a virtual event where there will be more funds announced as to how they're going to be allocated in the Chicago area to artists. Now, your category is in the teaching arena, correct? Tell us more about that arena.
That's correct. Yeah. So it's 10 artists, and I believe it's 2 per category. And I was awarded in the category of teaching artist, teaching disciplines.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. Give us a little bit on your background on teaching. Where are you right now? Where have you been in your journey as an instructor, as a teacher, as a professor in the arts world?
Yeah, you know, I've been, as you say that, I'm thinking back of all the, all my careers or places where I've been at, and it's been quite a journey. I think, you know, you and I have had some conversations in the past about, you know, this, the hustle and working, and this is what makes this award, like, you know, extra special, I think, not just for me, but for other awardees in the past, is that 3 Arts is really supporting our work, what we do in Chicago and with the community. And it's just really beautiful to get recognized and be valued in the city. You know, I think for me, my career as an educator and an artist, I really have been the same. You know, I became an artist because I wanted to teach. Nowhere did I imagine my trajectory would be. You know, it's been about 10 years now. So, you know, right after, I started working first, right after I received my MFA from Northern Illinois University, you know, I pursued my artistic career, we could call it, right? Like, I was really into making and creating, and I did residencies. I did that for a couple of years. I was in New Mexico for a year doing an art residency, came back to Chicago Artist Coalition residency, and that's where really I started to merge both my art and teaching practice together. Started working at the Museum of Contemporary Art in Chicago as a lead artist guide and teaching artist. So there we worked with students from K through 12 from Chicago public schools. Every day they would come into the museum in the morning, and we would do an inquiry-based, artist-led conversations about art. I worked at the museum. Could always remember that, of the Art Institute of Chicago. Yeah. I worked for the Smart Museum of Art. I led, co-led for 2 summers their teen program as well. I'm there in Hyde Park area. Yeah. So I've been, yeah, it's been such, like, can't name everywhere I've worked, but I've been, you know, definitely a teacher with schools, museums in different capacities. Leading workshops. I've done workshops for other educators, and it all revolves around this idea of how you, as a type of about and about trauma, about all these issues of, like, contemporary art does, right? Like, what's happening in our lives right now? How can art be used to have these conversations and to take action? And that's really what's been my focus, both in my practice as an artist, but also as an educator all over Chicago.
Now, I find it really interesting, before you get really into that, because I'm very interested in learning more about the trauma-based art and how you respond to it and your history and your upbringing and your father's work. But before we get into that, and you mentioned it briefly right now, your time in New Mexico, exploring UFOs, exploring the desert and things like that. You were a student. You were a student of the desert for a while. I remember following that journey of yours at the time. Share what you learned, what you came home with after that time there, and how long were you there?
Yeah, I like the way you put it, the student of the desert, of nature.
Yeah.
I mean, that experience in Roswell was transformational. You know, I mean, to be able to be giving, you know, they provided me with a space to live, a stipend, and a materials budget for a whole year. So it was just to make art. And I was coming right out of grad school. Mm-hmm. So for me at that time, it just really allowed me to I guess, in the most, how can I describe it? Like, the thing that transformed me the most was like figuring out like who I was, you know? I mean, imagine being in, right? You're like in the middle, kind of nowhere. I mean, Roswell is not nowhere, but we lived as the artist residency, like where they placed us is a little bit in the outskirts of Roswell. Mm-hmm. So we're surrounded by desert. You're in this place where you don't know anyone. I didn't have a smartphone with me. I had like this, a little TV, but I didn't have internet. I didn't have a computer either. So it was just me, my art materials, and some books, you know, and just grinding every day. And you know, I think if there's anyone, I mean, we could probably all relate right now when you're confronted with isolation, confronted with, you know, not going out and being indoors, like it really forces you to look at yourself in a very deep way, to look at your traumas, right? Like all these things start coming out, all the things that you're trying to hide with the busyness of the everyday, mm-hmm. all these things you're trying to ignore that you don't have time to deal with, you don't have time to grieve, you know, this whole capitalist machine. Like now all of a sudden, like it's just you, it's you in silence. And you're confronted with all your demons, with all your love, with all everything, right? And it really gave me an opportunity to like stare at that pain, mm-hmm. and to really figure out like who am I at the moment? Who do I want to be? And explore these new identities and new ways of being. And I connected, I think it's probably hard not to, with the beautiful landscape of New Mexico. It's incredible. I felt deeply connected to an ancestral energy that's down there. I felt immediately connected to the landscape. I would spend my days going on hikes and sketching, walking in the rivers. It was just really transformational. But I think the biggest aspect was me dealing with that pain and with traumas that I had put away. And specifically at that time, I was dealing, when I was in high school, two of my close friends were murdered. And I had never dealt with that pain, you know, when I was a high school student, all the way to when I was in this residency. I had put it away to the point where I had forgotten the names of my friends and I had forgotten our memories because it was too much for me to handle. So I think that transformational experience was definitely rooted in like confronting my pain, confrontation with like really figuring out who I was and with my feelings.
And, you know, I feel like that's when a lot of change came in your work. I mean, that's just my view from the outside. I don't know if you agree with that, but I did see a huge change, like a deeply impacted the work that you're doing and the message that you're sharing, you know, having to do with that trauma and facing it. And speaking of that trauma, tell us about your upbringing and where you grew up in. You know, it's related to how your friends died, I could say, right? The situations that they were in, maybe they didn't have the same opportunities that you did. Tell us a little bit about your hometown and how you grew up.
Yeah, well, I was born in Guadalajara, Jalisco, right? Mm-hmm. My father and my mother with my two older sisters came to the United States, to Chicago. when I was 4 years old. So I was born in Mexico, raised here. I was undocumented, I think, all through grade school, and middle school, and the beginning of high school. I think that's when I received my citizenship in high school, towards the end of high school, but I became a legal resident sometime before that. Grew up in a city called Chicago Heights, 30 miles south of Chicago. It's really famous it's like the home place of Al Capone. It's a lot of Italian. It's also, you know, labeled as the city of immigrants. It's a lot of Polish, Italian, Mexican immigrant families that helped build that city. It was a city that had tons of money, lots of money. I mean, the high school that I went to, Bloom High School, incredibly beautiful, large building. Mm-hmm. And slowly kind of began, just transformed into something else. There's a lot of myths of why that happened. You know, unfortunately, there's a lot of like racist myths. People blame that, you know, like Mexicans came into the neighborhood, Black people came into it, made it worse. I mean, the fact was that politics in Chicago Heights played a big role on the economy. Mm-hmm. A lot of communities, other people think that it was white flight. You know, people were coming in. And so you have these beautiful big homes that are not really desolate. They're abandoned, they're broken up. They just knocked down the only hospital in town. I mean, if you drive by there, it unfortunately, you know, it's hard to say this about my community because I love the people there, and there's a really amazing things happening there as well. But on a visual surface level, it looks very desolate in certain areas. You know, there are some beautiful things happening culturally there that I love Chicago Heights for, and the people there are beautiful and resilient, and they're keeping it going. But the infrastructure and the money is just not coming in. Yeah. So at the time when I was growing up, it was in the 90s. So there was what I call a race war, really. It was around the time that Chicago, and, you know, maybe coincidentally, I worked with the company, you know, with Chicago Housing Authority, which that's public housing for community members. And at that time in the 90s, Chicago Housing Authorities was... when they destroyed Caprini Greens and they were like, you know, gentrifying those places and knocking down Section 8 homes. And so people were being displaced in the city of Chicago, specifically in the south side of Chicago. Mm-hmm. And these people that had nowhere else to go, some became homeless, other people were given Section 8 homes, and they were pushed to the south suburbs, to Chicago Heights. And so that stirred up a lot of gang wars, you know, a lot of like, I'd rather not name the gangs. I don't think we need to go there, but it was just a lot of violence happening, right? People moving into these communities. Unfortunately, gangs started fighting each other for territory. And around that time, that's when my friends were murdered. And I myself was involved a lot of that, you know, just being a teenager, not finding your own place. I was mixed up in some things that, you know, I don't know if I shouldn't have. I mean, if I wouldn't have, I wouldn't be the person I was. I think it was just a product of the circumstances culturally and economically and where I was at. And I, you know, like my friends, all of us that grew up in that time, like we all had the same opportunities, you know. I think just some people just, it's just, you know, how life is. It's messy. It's not always as simple as like,
it's not a straight,
you know, especially
line.
When you're coming. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean,
so yeah.
Your dad was working in construction. Was he working in the steel mills?
Yeah, you know, I mean, so we came here, my grandfather, my grandparents, actually, both my mother and father's side, with the Bracero project. So they were farm workers in Mexico, and then buses would go pick them up and bring them to Chicago so they could work in steel. And my mom and dad are here with us. Actually, my mom and my dad were working the fields in this area, like Linwood. My dad was started, and my grandfather worked in the steel and fabricas, you know, and working there. My mom worked in a restaurant, both like worked really hard. But we were in Chicago Heights due to that lineage of the Bracero project, paving quite a literal road for us to follow and to move into Chicago.
And I guess what I'm trying to get at is the homage that you give to the work that your father has done and the work that he did with his hands and your family in general you know, the products and the materials that you use in your art. What are some of those materials that you use?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I like to think of it as a, you know, I was calling it like these working class sensibilities. I myself worked in construction, worked since I was little, my parents worked, my family worked. So these were materials that I was always familiar with doing drywall, building drywall, trusses, steel, all these materials that I was surrounded with. And for me, it just became, when I was trying to find my voice and trying to figure out, you know, how can I carve my own place in this art world? I was like, you know, what makes me me? And what makes me me is having these values or ideals that come with working class sensibility, which is to work hard, to use these materials, to persevere, right? Mm-hmm. So I took all of that and I started using the symbols of the materials of using drywall, 2x4s, screws, anything you could find in a construction zone, really, and started really building those materials as a celebration and as an entry point to start talking about people that build these things, right? So like I've used my work to have conversations with students, and we would have, you know, there's these aha moments, right? When like they're asking me like, you know, why are these materials a drywall or wood? And then I explain it and I ask them question, and they're like, oh, you know, my dad and my mom, you know, they both work, you know, they work building homes. I'm like, yeah, that's really great. He's like, yeah. And then it starts like uplifting them. And I'm like, well, I was like, do you think your dad's an artist then? And then they're just like thinking about it, right? Like, oh, I think he is an artist. You know, so it's that idea of like not thinking of these working class materials as something negative, but rather like empowering and realizing that this is like really sophisticated work and hard work and beautiful work. And it just like this idea of being an artist kind of gets bigger and gets expanded. It's like,
yeah, God,
it's all of us working with our hands, like not just construction workers, you know, cooks, like my mother in the restaurants, like the magic behind cooking and prepping and using your hands, right? And your smells and the alchemy of all of that and just right. Providing the love and all of that. So like there's all these connections to the art world, I think, that comes from those types of places as well.
And what is one of the pieces that you would say that people have seen that reflect some of the trauma that you're talking about? And what is it made from? I know we're being listened to, but we can certainly share a photo of that. But if you could describe that to me, what does a piece like that look like that you have created?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the closest, you know, at least the one that comes to mind right away is the sculpture is called in Roswell. And in Roswell, you know, one of the things I was thinking about was how can I shift my thinking from like making artwork for people or making artwork for myself? Like, what did that mean? And then I was really into nature, right? And like really connected. So I was like, what if I made artwork for nature? What if I made this piece as an offering to the moon? I was really in love with that type of thinking of like putting aside these objects as for someone else to see and consume. Like, what if I just created and the energy that went involved in creating these pieces were for devotions for the moon? So I made this piece called An Old God Renewed that is a sculpture that when I first made it, it was about 9 feet tall, close to 10 to 12 feet wide, and probably another 10 feet, you know, depth. So it was like this huge, you could walk around it. It was composed of 1,000 little pieces of wood that I cut up and painted, and I found and I scavenged in my communities. The head part of the sculpture is a jaguar, and the jaguar is a mask that comes off. So you could take the mask on and off, and it's a wearable object. So we could do performances, and we have done performances with the masks also as a offering to the moon and to this energy. I created a mythology story that surrounds this idea, this mythical idea of the realm of the dead. And the creation mythology was stories based off my friends that were murdered. And so it was a way to confront that pain, but also talk about it in a different way. Like, where did the, where would their souls go after they died? You know, and for me, I saw the moon as that void that once people leave this world, their soul would go through the moon and enter this alternative reality where it was a new beginning. And this sculpture represented, was a visual depiction of that mythology that I was creating. And that showed that that piece was really, I didn't really expect for it to sort of keep living. It was sort of like this offering. It was an outdoor piece at the time. And then it just ended up happening that it held up really well. And right when I was in Chicago, there was somebody, the Riverside Art Center wanted to see it and wanted to exhibit it. So I moved it from New Mexico to Chicago. And ever since then, it's just a piece that's still alive. Like right now, it's been up at the show at both Eagle and Serpent that I was at the Chicago Cultural Center. Mm-hmm. So the piece itself, that even though it was intended to be an offering to the moon that would just sort of, you know, blend in with nature and stay there, has actually come along for the...
It's hard not to be...
Come along for the ride, traveling yeah. with me.
And then, like you said, it wasn't really for someone else to look at and observe and enjoy, but it can't help it. It's inevitable. It's going to happen with art. You know, eyes are going to be laid upon it. You know, a life can be affected by it. And it's really great how you said you made up your own mythical story. I think that's great. I'm sure your students just love that idea of them creating their own mythical stories. And I envy them because I wish I was in one of those classes with them. But I think that's really great. Now, here we are, 2020, a little bit before the pandemic started. Your exhibit at the Cultural Center was starting to take off. What's happened since then? What's been happening at the you know, with the pandemic and the exhibit?
Yeah, so the, you know, the exhibit, I think, was up for about a month. That's when COVID started really taking control of our lives, at least here in Chicago. Mm-hmm. The show transformed into a digital exhibition. My collaborator, Teresa Silver, and I created a PDF in collaboration with Anna Lu, which is a librarian at the Newberry Library. And we created this sort of this guide where you would look at some of the artwork visually through a PDF computer, and then I would talk about some of the topics that we were addressing. So for example, like trauma and mythologies and death rituals. Mm-hmm. And then with Anna Lu and the Newberry Library, we had links that could send you to the library so you could read more books. So if you were interested about mythology, like Aztec mythology or trauma based on the conquest, you would just click on a link and it would send you, and you could start reading and learning more about that through literature and through archival documents. So it lived in a digital platform for a while. You know, at that time, things were really uncertain with COVID. And then unfortunately, you know, the city of Chicago and the Culture Center decided that they weren't going to be able to open up. It just wasn't realistic. I mean, the center is just it's in the heart of Chicago. It's what makes that center so beautiful, right? So accessible, so many people go in. And for that same reason, it was too hard to really contain or deal with the virus. So actually just we're in the process of deinstalling it right now.
And I recall how much work it was to install. So I'm sure you're in that mode right now where you're in the middle of a lot of physical labor as you uninstall it. But congratulations on that run. It made it be longer because of the pandemic, sort of, kind of. It made it be there longer, you know. So that's good. It sounds like you had a little practice on isolation out of New Mexico for the pandemic. So
preparation.
Yeah. So now that that we're here with the Three Arts Foundation and the grants that you've received, what are your plans with what you have received? What are you doing with that?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like such a gift to get the support, right? So basically the award comes with a $25,000 stipend, yes, or honorarium, you know, that's unrestricted, no strings attached. So I could use it any way that I want. And the idea is that it's a support to build momentum in my career, to really focus on the things that I want, especially in times of COVID, you know, like to receive the support is so huge.
Yes.
You know, quite honestly, right now, some of the things that what I really want to do is invest in students. Before I won the 3 Arts Award, I started this project called Tees for Teaching, where people could donate $25 and they would receive a t-shirt designed by either me or another artist. And all of the money, 100% of the profit, went to establishing free art workshops and educational opportunities for students, young students all through Chicago and the suburbs. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to be merging those two things. You know, we were able to raise about $2,000 to $3,000 with that. And so what I really want to do is to work on finding ways to reach out to students digitally, probably more so in the summer, and develop, I want to develop a curriculum that's based on using art as tools for social justice, for civic engagement, and especially in a time with COVID where, you know, schools are indoor, you know, it's in your home all of a sudden. I want to see if there's opportunities or find the opportunities to enter the student's home and bring art to them and create those opportunities for them. So that's what I'm going to be working on. And we'll see when the how that goes, you know, like when we're able to start doing that as well. One of my biggest goals, I think, in life, and hopefully I could start doing that soon, is I want to open up a big studio where I could do my own practice, but also have it be a haven, a place where like communities and students could come. Yeah. I have an open door policy. I really love working with students, high school students in particular, college and K-12, but I have this place where like students could come in the community and work with an artist and have a free space and free materials for them. That's really what my ultimate vision is to have in my life. So I think all of that is working towards that goal to get that place up and running.
I commend you, because I think a lot of people think of an artist as someone who's just kind of like out there free, you know, like I'm just creating to be, you know, happy, which is great. But I've always seen your work be very targeted to helping communities, to helping young people, to talk about tough issues. And, you know, that's a tough thing to do while still staying true to what you believe in, you know, and expressing yourself. So I think Three Arts did a great job in selecting you for this category, because you're that artist that's deep into what he believes in, but is also always wanting to give back. And I think there's a really strange connection: $25 for the t-shirt, and then you got $1,000. To do more work. You know, it's definitely not an accident. I feel like it's all, you know, coming full circle for you, and I congratulate you so much. I've seen you grow over the years. You know, I remember seeing an exhibit years ago, and I was just so impressed by, you know, the contrast. I gotta say, it was in a gallery that was not in, like, you could say the hood, right? It was like one of the galleries, like, so clean, pristine, you know, maybe there were some Latinos there, but it wasn't targeted to Latinos. But your message, the braceros, it was so strong, and your sculptures, they were so in your face. Like, there's no way anyone can turn and say, I'm not talking about this topic. It was right there. And that's what I love about the work that you do, is that you take it where people would never imagine it would go. It's in a new space. It's in a new space where it needs to be. Now, you know, in this day and age, you know, we're becoming so socially aware. Maybe our young people are becoming so socially aware because of the things that are happening. And it's just the perfect timing for you to start using those funds in that direction. So that's great.
Yeah. Thank you so much for that. Lovely words. I really appreciate it.
Definitely. Well, you know, I get really passionate about art and about talking to you every time I talk to you. I'm so glad we get to capture it today. Like, it's actually being recorded and we can share it with other people, because I feel like every time we've had a conversation, and I try to do it justice on paper, it's never the same as talking to you and getting your insights. So if there's anything else you want to share about what you have coming up, please feel free before we sign off.
Yeah, I guess I could do a little plug-in for some of my stuff that's happening. I appreciate that. So, I mean, I just work with some students, some amazing students from Hope College in Holland, Michigan. And so there's a digital exhibition of my work, and I'm in conversation with these students. And if anybody wants to check it out, that's Hope College. I do have, I have some more shows coming out, but I mean, really, I think what would be really amazing if y'all could make it on October 19th for the celebration of the 3Arch ceremony. You could register at 3arch.org. It's going to be really beautiful. There's going to be a lot of artists showcasing their artwork and music, and it's just going to be a big love fest. It's going to be amazing. So if y'all can make it out, it'll be incredible.
Yes, yes, definitely will be there, be watching and rooting for you and sharing with everyone, like, check this out. And, you know, it's a great opportunity to get to know more artists in Chicago and see who's out there, what they're doing in so many different arenas, you know, not just in teaching, but also in music, in dance. There's so many different artists out there that we need to be made more aware of. And I think this is the perfect time for it. We can all attend because we're all at home.
Yeah.
So thank you, Luis. Thank you so much for being here in the queso with me. And it's always nice to bump into you somewhere or another.
Yeah, muchas gracias. Thank you so much. It's been a lot of fun. I really appreciate your time, your energy.
No, thank you. And we'll be talking soon, I'm sure.
Okay, absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Oh,